God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones. Our speaker is being recorded with her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Glinda, from Mission Viejo.
Hi, my name is Glinda, and I am an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here, sort of. I'm glad to be in the meeting. Not glad to be at the podium. It's not a place that I'm comfortable. I'm sorry, I'm staring into this microphone, or the one that's recording, and that makes me nervous. You do not make me nervous. I have to put my feet under me. First of all, what time would you like me to stop? 9:20, I can do that. I'll be happy to do that. I really appreciate being invited. Thank you very much, Mike and Kathleen, for the email. Welcome to all the newcomers. There were 5 of you here tonight that were willing to identify. I did not always identify as a newcomer when I was one, so I know there are people probably in the room who have that same hesitation to raise our hands. We don't want to make a commitment to something that we may not be sure about. And congratulations to Robin. 9 years. That's a long time. Actually, I think 9 days is longer than 9 years. those first days of sobriety, I think, are the hardest. And I think I still remember when I got my 30-day token and how amazed I was, how excited I was. I wasn't going to stick around. It was at least it marked 30 days of the hiatus I was taking from drinking. That's what my initial foray into AA was. It was just a vacation from drinking, and why I came here was because I wanted to quit long enough so that when I went back and started drinking again, I would be able to control it. And I figured some length of abstinence from alcohol would enable me to do that. And I think a lot of us have that illusion. The big book talks about it, how we think just a short period of time or a long period of time. And then, the book talks about the man who retired and was retired after and had, what's my word? Anyway, didn't drink for 25 years. And he got his carpet slippers and sat back and started drinking, and he had gone beyond recall in 4 years. And I think he was lucky to have those 4 years, although I don't know, lucky maybe is not the right word. I'd rather die than drink again, and that's the truth. Because I don't ever want to be the woman that I was. I don't want to ever live again the way that I did before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was drinking. It was the worst. When I finally did come to AA to take that little break, my thought just went out the window. That's how quickly it happens, that they call it senior moments, and I guess I qualify. But anyway, I can't remember where the end of that sentence went. So it'll probably happen 2 or 3 times tonight, and I don't even worry about it anymore. It's just the way it is. I still have an ego, but my ego was a little bit different than it is now, and I don't like embarrassing myself, and that's a little bit embarrassing when you can't finish a sentence. But my ego used to be the central force in my life. How I looked to other people, what other people thought of me. I heard a speaker say once, and I thought I just adopted it, was my higher power was what other people thought of me. And I understood that completely. That's exactly what my higher power was. What you thought of me was more important than what I was or who I was. If I didn't get caught, I was fine. It was always about other people's opinions about me. And my ego isn't quite that big today. I pray every morning that God will stick a pin in my ego and deflate it just a little bit more. I know he's not going to pop it. It just doesn't work that way. It takes effort and it takes work and it takes time. But that's my hope, is that, and he seems to have done that. My ego has been deflated a little bit each day over the years that I have been sober and that I have been working this program. And I have not been working the program for the same length of time that I have been sober. And that's really what my story is about. It's what I like to pass on to other people. I think if there's any wisdom, I have no wisdom that is not in the big book, and I don't even have that. I grab my big book and read it often because the wisdom doesn't stay up here. And thank God we have, it's written down. We don't have to memorize it. We don't even have to remember it. We just have to make use of it. Again, it's gone. So I'm going to tell you my story, and I think I can do all right with telling you my story. I started drinking in college, very first week at school, and I went to college. It was a geographic, because I had not been able to convince the people around me, the other kids that I went to school with, that I was something special. They knew I wasn't, and I could not rise above that and convince them that I was anything more than what I thought was totally inadequate. I just felt totally inadequate. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't funny enough. It seemed to me that I had nothing going for me at all. And I couldn't convince anybody otherwise, including myself. So I went away to school where they didn't know yet that I was nothing. And I could convince them if I tried hard enough. That was always my idea. If I could just try hard enough, I can convince them that I'm somebody. So I went off to school. Nothing had changed. I didn't have a personality transplant over the summer or anything. I was still the same inadequate me. But I was going to go to college, and somehow I was going to say and do all the right things. And I got up there, and I found that nothing had changed. I was no different. And I went to a fraternity party that very first week. And I walked in the room, and I didn't know a soul, including my date. It was a blind date. And I felt so uncomfortable and so disappointed that when I walked in that room, nothing was different. I didn't turn heads. I didn't suddenly become special to anyone, including me, until I had a couple of drinks. I had a Tom Collins, and the first drink had no effect on me at all that I can recall. The second drink, I was amazed before I was halfway through. I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. I had a new attitude and outlook on life. My fear of people left me, and I suddenly realized that alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself. And I embraced alcohol for the next 18, almost 19 years. I knew after that, right in the middle of that second drink, I knew my life has just changed. I now have the answer. I now know how to be special, because what happened was I suddenly could talk and not worry about what I was saying, and I found I could say intelligent things. I could listen to other people, which I'd never been able to do before, because while you were talking, I was always focused on what am I going to say when they're through. I was able to laugh without... I heard one other person in my years in AA, I heard one other speaker say, and I so identified, he said, I never knew when to laugh. And I'd never heard anybody else say that other than that man. And I identified with it because I had to make sure, and this is the way I did everything, I had to make sure other people thought it was funny. I wanted to make sure that I, you know, if it was a dirty joke, should I pretend I don't get it? Should I laugh even though I don't get it? I never knew how to react to things. I never knew how to behave because nothing ever came naturally to me. I had tried so hard and so long to convince other people I was something other than who I was that even when I wanted to just be myself, I had no idea what that was until I had those two drinks and suddenly I could just be me. And I found out, looking back, I realized that I liked me. I liked, because those two drinks just kind of brought me down to a place where I wasn't worrying about what everybody thought of me. I wasn't even worrying about what I thought of me. And I'd never been more comfortable in my life. And the doctor's opinion talks about that sense of ease and comfort which comes at once from taking a few drinks. And that's something we alcoholics seem to have in common. I take a couple of drinks, and I have a sense of ease and comfort that I just had never experienced before, and I ran with it. I didn't drink all the time. I didn't drink I was 18 at the time, and so I couldn't get it and all the time. And it didn't occur to me to, you know, have somebody go buy it for me. But every time I was going to go to a party, every time I was going to go to any kind of a social function, my first thought was, how am I going to get those two drinks, those magic two drinks into me as quickly as I can without looking like a lush? And the logistics of getting over to the bar and having two drinks very quickly, and should I take one to the ladies' room and then come back? And I just didn't know how to do it, but I usually managed. And I don't want to give the impression either that that first night or any night after that I ever stopped with two drinks. I never stopped with two drinks. From the very first, that first night I drank, two drinks was just the launching pad. I just drank until the party was over, until I had to go home, until the liquor was gone, until whatever, until I passed out. I did that a lot. But I never quit of my own accord, not from that very first night. In my whole drinking career, I can only remember two times that I said no to a drink. But one of them was because I knew I was about to make an ass of myself and I was in a place where I did not want to do that. And the other reason was because I was feeling very sick to my stomach and I managed to get down a couple glasses of milk and then I could drink again. So even though I said no to a drink, I started up again about a half an hour later. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. And I had... there were certain alcohols, you know, I liked vodka was mainly my drink because I frankly don't like alcohol very much. Vodka seemed to have the least taste. It seemed it was the least offensive going down. And I thought for a long time when my drinking had become a problem, I really was convinced that I wasn't an alcoholic because alcoholics will drink anything. And I don't drink any kind of whiskey. I don't like whiskey. Until there's nothing left but whiskey. And suddenly, I had to lower that bar because I drank the whiskey and I think, boy, that wasn't so bad. But somehow I'm still not an alcoholic because I don't drink it straight out of the bottle until there's no glass. I'm not an alcoholic because I always mix it with something unless there's nothing to mix it with. There was always a reason that I wasn't an alcoholic. And when we start having to convince ourselves we're not alcoholic, we got a problem. And I spent a lot of time in the last years of my drinking trying to convince myself that I was not alcoholic. It didn't feel to me that I was entertaining the thought. It was just my intuition, I guess, was fighting the fact that I was an alcoholic because the thought would occur to me and I would immediately dismiss it. And anyway, I got married during the time that I was drinking. I married a man. We dated for 2 years, and we really did date. We did that back then. And we dated for 2 years, and we have agreed that we probably did not have one date in those 2 years that alcohol was not involved in one way or another. We just always drank. And if there was no occasion where people were drinking, we would create an occasion, or we would just simply not worry about the occasion and go ahead and drink. When our older son was born, I quit work, and we used to go out all the time. We met at work, and we used to go out all the time after work. When I was staying home with our son, and my husband was still going out after work drinking, and I got a resentment about that. And so I finally started drinking. The only reason I started drinking alone was because he was inconsiderate enough not to come home. So I had to drink alone, except for this baby. But that drinking that I did got earlier and earlier in the day. Our second son was born, and when he was born, a month after he was born, our older son started preschool. And I went to, they had a mother's, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a mother's club. And we had recently moved into a very nice area, and I wanted to be a pillar of the community. I wanted everybody to like me. I still operate from, you know, having to be somebody. And I wanted to join this mother's group. And I knew the only way that they would like me was if I had a couple of drinks before I went to that meeting. Because I had gotten to a place in my drinking, and this was in 1974, and I had started drinking. My drinking started in 1960, so I've been drinking for 14 years at this point. In order to go to this mother's meeting, I had to have a couple of drinks, and that mother's meeting was at 9 o'clock in the morning. And that began the who's laughing? Are you really alcoholic? never had that reaction before. I usually get this, because that's what we do. We just, a lot of, even people who don't drink in the morning understand drinking in the morning if we're alcoholic. But anyway, it occurred to me, I don't know, maybe 2 days after this mother's meeting, what if I go to the store and I see one of those mothers in the store and I don't have to say hi, and then I don't know what to say after that, because that was always my problem. I never knew what to say after you say hello. Because I was so terrified of saying the wrong thing, nothing intelligent ever came into my head unless I had a couple of drinks, as I did at that first fraternity party. I still am drinking for the reaction that I got at that fraternity party 14 years before. And it was until the end of my drinking, and as I say, I drank almost 19 years, and at that point, I still believed that I was drinking for the same, so that I could have that reaction that I'd gotten at that fraternity party years before, which was to be able to be social. Now, I would have thought that, even though by the time I finished drinking, I was drinking all alone in my house with all the doors closed, but I would have still told you that the reason I drank, and believed it, the reason I drank was so that I could be social, you know, I could socialize with people. Because I didn't know what to say and I didn't know what to do unless I was drinking. So that began my morning drinking, and I drank in the morning and daily for 4.5 years. And I was raising 2 kids, and I wasn't doing it very successfully. I was not an abusive mother, but I was a negligent mother, because it was so much more important to me to drink than it was to fix my kids' lunch. It was more important to me to drink than drive them to school. I did all those things. I had to do them, but I resented my children for it. I remember resenting my kids because it was time to take them to school, even though I wanted to get rid of them. But I had to take them to school, and I couldn't drink in the car. I got to a place where things that I had to do, whether it was a dentist appointment, volunteering at the kids' school, whatever it was that I was doing, I half the time didn't show up, and the other half I arrived late because I had to have one more drink, and I left early because I had to get home and have another drink. I was my life was completely controlled by my need for alcohol, although I thought it was my want for alcohol. I had no idea when I got to AA that underneath that want to was a have to that I knew nothing about. As I got into about the last 6 months of my drinking, it occurred to me that drinking was causing me some embarrassment. And that is about the only thing that would get my attention. I knew that I was making a fool of myself in front of people, and I still want to look good. It's still so important to me what other people think of me. The fact that that my kids, one time a woman came to my front door and screamed at me because my children were playing out in the middle of the street. And they were 4 and 7 when I got sober. And I don't know where this was in my drinking. It was probably, I don't know, maybe I had a 3 and 5 year old, and they were playing out in the middle of the street, and she came and screamed at me, and I thought she was a bitch. There was a time when my youngest son, when he came home from preschool, a little girl slammed his hand in the car door. I took him into the bathroom, put ice cubes in the sink, stuck his hand in the sink, said, "This will make you feel better," and I went out to the kitchen and put ice cubes in a glass and made myself a drink. And I completely ignored him after that. Those are not the things that got my attention. Those are the things that I found it very hard to deal with once I got sober. And I had to do an inventory, and I had to look back on what kind of a drunk I was, and I had to use the word drunk. For me, alcoholic is much too nice a word. I was a drunk. I was a hopeless, helpless drunk. And my little children were being raised by a woman who could not take care of them. My husband was basically unaware of what was going on because he was in his own denial. And that very often happens, I think, more in the case of men than women. Men do not want to believe that they're married to a drunk, to an alcoholic wife. But so he really didn't quite get. He knew there was something wrong, but he didn't know what it was. If he had known, I assure you, he would have taken those children away from me. Could some strong guy do something for me? Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm losing the use of my right hand, and it's really very frustrating. So anyway, because I was embarrassing myself in front of people, and I started to decide I needed to control my drinking. And for most of us, I think that's the place where we start discovering we have a problem. obviously you can't. It isn't. I love Dr. Paul used to say that if you don't think it's a problem, it's not a problem, which in some cases is good news, but in some cases it's not so good news. And in my case, I didn't think I had a problem, and so I didn't have a problem. The fact that I was drinking the way I was, and then I was my whole life, I clearly could see once I got sober, was going down the tubes. My life was totally unmanageable. My husband would not have, he wouldn't have stayed ignorant much longer. I was going to get fired from my job. I know that I don't know what would have happened. I can't tell you that I would have been a street person, or I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know where I would have ended up, but I know that it would not have been in a good place unless I had been at some point finally willing to see that I had a bigger problem than I thought I'd, or had a problem at all. But anyway, I was trying to control my drinking, and the harder I tried, nothing helped, nothing changed. When I was doing the best I could to control my drinking, I didn't have one drop less. I didn't start 1 minute later in the morning. Nothing changed about the way I drank, and I was doing the best I could to control my drinking. I was still starting first thing in the morning. I was drinking all day till I passed out. Then I would, God knows where my kids were when I was passed out. I'm so grateful my kids survived. I'm so grateful that my children survived. I drove with them in the car. I had a neighbor who lived a mile away call me one day, and she said, did you have any idea that your children just rode over here on their big wheels? And they were little guys, and they were a mile away, and I had no idea. And it annoyed me. I had to go pick them up. That's the way I drank. That's how I ended up. Finally, I started making phone calls to Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing seemed to be working. I was just trying to figure it all out in my own head. No wonder it wasn't working, but I started calling AA. And AA, every time I called, whether I was talking to the person in the office or whether somebody did a 12-step call back over the phone to me, they always said, I'll pick you up for a meeting tonight. I'll meet you at a meeting tonight. Well, I didn't mean tonight. I just mean in general, I need some help. And they got real specific about when I was supposed to get this help, and I would just hang up. And I did that time and time and time again. Until finally one day on a Sunday, a woman named Betty called me back because I had called central office. And she was on the 12-step call list, and she called me back. And she talked for quite a long time, longer than most of the other women had talked to me. And I remember kind of thinking, I don't know what she said, but I kind of remember going, yeah. I wasn't particularly interested until she said something no one else had said. She said, I can't get to a meeting till Wednesday. Will you meet me there? And I said, yes. I'm absolutely convinced that Betty had asked me to meet her at a meeting that night. I would not have gotten sober when I did. Maybe not at all. I don't know. But God knew in his infinite wisdom that I wasn't ready to go to a meeting that night, that I was going to be ready by Wednesday. And I sort of made a surrender because I thought, well, I'm alcoholic. I did not admit I was alcoholic. But I have a problem. I'm going to go get help for the problem. But in the meantime, I'm going to drink the way I want to drink, as if I hadn't been drinking the way I wanted to drink. But anyway, I thought I was just going to kind of not hide it anymore. I had bottles hidden all over the house. I was, you know, one of those supposedly secret drinkers. It wasn't a secret from anybody but me. But I agreed to meet her. And so anyway, I started just drinking with abandon. And Monday morning about noon, the next day, and I still had two more days to go. And I was sitting at my kitchen table, and all of a sudden, the awareness came to me. It wasn't a thought so much or a feeling. It was just an awareness. You can't do this tomorrow. You won't make it through one more day. When we're done, we're done. And I got gypped. I mean, I had to make my phone call in the middle of that day on Monday. Now, I knew I couldn't quit in the middle of the day. I knew once I started, I couldn't stop. But I called AA one more time, and this time I told them my name was Glenda. I had been calling them and telling my name was Carol for weeks. They thought I was Carol because I was afraid somebody might know me, and Glenda being an unusual name, I just thought somebody there might know me. And so I said, I've got to get to a meeting tonight. I cannot wake up tomorrow and do this again. And even though I knew, and I still believe, that something dreadful would have happened that next day, that Tuesday, I am absolutely certain that would have been a catastrophic day in my life had I had to drink. And even knowing that, I knew that I did not have the power to not drink that next day unless I did something that would give me the beginning of willpower. Because I thought plenty drinking was all about willpower. I thought I was going to have to try really hard for the rest of my life to control my drinking. I was going to have to stop for a while in AA and then I would control. And I thought it was something that was going to control the rest of my life. And I think that's so much the fear for so many of us when we first get here, is that we're going to have to fight this thing. The good news for those of you who are new, we don't have to fight it. There comes a time, and it's in God's time, it's not in ours, but there just comes a time when He decides we've had enough and we don't have to fight it anymore. But there's work to be done. So I went to a meeting. They told me where there was a meeting that night. I went to that meeting. That was a Monday night. I came home. It was a terrible meeting. It was really a dreadful meeting. I knew it then. I know it now. But the miracle was, and I suppose it's a miracle. Yeah, it's a miracle. I came home from that Monday night meeting, and I didn't drink. But I didn't drink not because of anything I heard in the meeting, not because of anything special. I didn't drink because that I knew that had to be my beginning. That had to be the place that marked tomorrow is now different. And I knew if I drank that night, I would just have to get up on Tuesday and drink again. Somehow I just instinctively knew that. So I didn't drink after that meeting, and I didn't drink on Tuesday. And I went back. I went to that meeting, not the same place. I went to a different meeting on Wednesday night and met Betty there. And what the wonderful thing about that meeting was so different than the one on Monday night. I thought, you know what, I can do this for as long as it's going to take me to get my break from alcohol, my vacation. I think I can do this, because the people in that room looked like a lot like the people in this room. They were clean and they were happy and they were joking and having fun, and it just, everything seemed light and airy in that meeting that night, and it was such a relief to me. I stayed sober for 2.5 months, and then I executed the decision that I had made. I think now I've had enough time. I haven't had a drink for 2.5 months. I'm absolutely certain I can control it. But somewhere in the back of my mind, because I went to meetings for those 2.5 months, I looked like I was a member of AA, but I was not a member of AA. And the reason I say that is because the requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I did not have a desire to stop drinking. I just had the desire to take a break. So I drank. It was a Sunday afternoon. We had some people over. And I thought, I'm gonna find out. But it was in the back of my head. There's a line in our big book. It says, if when you honestly want to, you cannot control your drinking, or you cannot stop drinking entirely, or if when drinking you cannot control the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I had not been totally unable to control my drinking, and that I was aware of. And I thought, if I can't control, I'm going to have 2 drinks. And if I can't control it, if I can't stop at the second drink, I will know that I am an alcoholic. What I heard in AA, I didn't know it was getting through to me, but obviously it was, because I knew that much. If I can't stop after the second drink, after I've taken this break, I will go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't left, but I will continue to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will turn myself into AA. I will become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will never drink again as long as I live, and I will do, you know, what you do. After the second drink, I knew that I was an alcoholic. I'd only had the 2 drinks, but I knew there was nothing that could keep me from going out to the kitchen to pour that 3rd drink. I knew there was nothing I could do, and I knew it sitting there. And I thought, okay, I am an alcoholic. I'm not going to be able to drink the rest of my life. I'm going to have to keep going to those meetings for as long as I live. I love that Robin, I really identified when Robin was talking. I think it was Robin who was talking about going to all those meetings for the rest of your life. And it when we're new, that does not sound appealing at all. Today, I love going to meetings. But back then, it didn't seem like a good idea. But I knew that was what was at stake if I had that 3rd drink, and yet I had to go have the 3rd drink. And I drank the rest of Sunday, and I drank the rest of Monday, and then I did exactly what I had planned to do. I went to my Monday night meeting. I'd found a really good step study that I liked. And I went to that meeting, and I came home from that meeting, and the plan was, I'm not going to drink after that meeting, as I had after the first Monday night meeting. I'm not going to have a drink. But I couldn't get past the liquor cabinet that night. I could not walk past that liquor cabinet and not stop and pour myself a drink. And I thought, ooh, AA is all about willpower. I just came from a meeting. I don't seem to have any willpower. AA isn't going to work for me. But I thought, but tomorrow is my sobriety date, really. I mean, that's when you, that's officially my sobriety date. So I'll just finish out tonight and I'll not drink tomorrow. But then I got up on Tuesday and I couldn't get past the liquor cabinet at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, oh my God, I knew I was in big trouble. The next 5 weeks, I lived in a hell that I have never been able to adequately describe even to myself, but I do remember it vividly. It was awful. I wanted to stop drinking. I wanted to be sober. I knew I was alcoholic. I that was clear to me when I couldn't have just two drinks. And I wanted to stop more than anything, and I couldn't. I could not stop long enough to go to a meeting sober, so I had to go to meetings drunk. I sat in meetings for the next 5 weeks drunk. I drove myself there drunk. I drove home drunk. I knew my answer was in AA, and for some reason, I could not not drink. And I prayed, and I read the big book, and I, even one time, I only remembered this about a year ago. So funny how we can forget these things. I went to a Catholic church. I'm not Catholic. I went to a Catholic church. I lit every candle in the church. I don't know to this day what those candles are for. I didn't know you were supposed to pay for them. I just lit them all up because I needed to get God's attention. I needed him to know I'm serious. I really, really want to be sober. I begged and I pleaded and nothing changed. I went to meetings and nothing changed. And finally, about 3 weeks into this, I heard somebody talk about surrender, how surrender is the key. We have to surrender. And I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't know what it meant. But if it's the key, that's what I'm going to do. So I started to surrender. I knew it had to do with surrendering my alcoholism to God. I knew that, but I didn't know how you go about doing that. So all I could do was say, God, I surrender. God, I surrender. God, I surrender. I said it all day, every day. In the meantime, I'm crying all the time. I'm pouring drinks. I'm crying while I'm pouring the drink as I'm going out the door to go to an AA meeting. Drive home drunk, pour another drink, pray, read the big book. It was just, and surrender. And it just went on and on. It was awful. Finally, on it was either Saturday or Sunday night, June 9th or 10th, I went to bed and I said, God, I don't know how to surrender. You're just going to have to do it for me. That was my ultimate surrender. I didn't know it was. It's just the only prayer I could think of. I was so desperate. I was so desperate. I woke up the next day. I drank. And as I say, though, I don't know if that was Saturday or Sunday night. But Monday night, I went back to I was continuing to go to all my meetings and went to my step study Monday night. I'd been drinking all day, was sitting in there drunk, as usual. And a man named Jim was talking about having had a problem, and he could not. I remember him saying he wrestled it like an alligator, and it would not go away. And he said, I finally went in, and I sat down in my chair, and he said, okay, God, I'm giving this to you. I don't want it anymore. It's now yours. I'm free. And with that, I sat up in my chair, and this little jolt of electricity went up my spine. The hair on my arms and the back of my neck stood up. My heart began to pound. And as that was happening, I felt God's right hand reach inside of me and take something away. And I knew something had just been removed from me, and I knew it was by the hand of God. But I didn't know what it was for probably, I don't know if it was a split second or 2 seconds, but there was a perceptible lapse of time between knowing something was gone and knowing that it was the obsession to drink. I thought, oh my God. And I thought, what's the date? That was June 11th, 1979. And I have not had a thought, a desire, a temptation to have another drink since that moment. Yeah, I was completely freed. And it was such a great gift. But you know, there's always a flip side. Yin and yang or yin and whatever that is. I think it's true. I think for everything I can put in the plus column, there's something that has to go in the minus column. And having had the obsession relieved so completely and knowing it was gone, I knew it was gone. I could have gone home that night and bartended and not have any trouble at all. I could still go home and bartend and not have any trouble at all. So my problem now was not having to not drink anymore. I was free. God had done it. And I thought it was a done deal. I thought it was a fait accompli. And the only reason I had to continue to go to AA, and I wasn't really sure why, but I heard people say, keep coming back. And it's the people who relapse are people who stop going to meetings. I heard that. And I knew because of those 5 weeks were such a gift. Again, they were hell, but they were such a gift. Here's the positive. I found out what being powerless over alcohol really means. I hadn't known it until that moment. I thought I could take a break from alcohol and then I could control my drinking. That's not, if we can control our drinking, we are not powerless over alcohol. I could not control my drinking. I cannot not, I couldn't stop. I am to this day, I'm as sure of my powerlessness as I was then. I absolutely know what would happen to me if I went out and took a drink. But I worked the steps and as best I could up to a certain point. I sort of played by my own rules, and I decided when I got to the second half of the eighth step, which says that we have to become willing to make amends to the people that we had harmed, and we make a list, and we have to become willing. And I drew a firm line. No, there is no way I'm going to anybody to tell them what I had done to them. And I stuck by that for the next almost 10 years, or 7.5 years, till I was 10 years sober. I did not make amends until I was 10 years sober. And I thought I was doing just fine, and I thought that I didn't have to. I thought God has removed the obsession. I don't need to do this. The only reason I need to work these steps is to become a finer person, and I'm fine now. And I really, that was what it was all about for me. It was a decision whether I wanted to be better off or not. And I thought I was doing just fine. There was a speaker in AA who coincidentally died the day after I got sober. But I heard his tapes in those days. And I loved his speaking. Did I tell you his name is Jimmy Ryan? I don't know if I said that or not. But anyway, one of the things he said that I think is so true. He said, when you get through the gates of Alcoholics Anonymous, don't stop at the first shack by the side of the road. Compared to where you've been, it's going to look like a palace. But if you keep walking around every bend, there's something even better. And I heard that, but I didn't take it to heart. I didn't believe it. Today, I know absolutely that that is true. I stopped at the first shack by the side of the road. I'm comfortable enough. I'm sober. Everything's fine. And in AA, I was looking good. I became secretary of great big meetings, and I took all the jobs that put me out in front of everybody. And I was Miss AA, and just in the eyes of everyone, including myself, just doing fine. But when I got to be about 7 years sober, I started to recognize the fact that there were things that were happening in the lives of other people. Other people who had gotten sober about the same time I did, or got sober after I did, had a light in their eyes, had something going on in them that I could see. They had become what I believe now. Those people had tapped into that spirit that was in all of us, and we kill it with alcohol. And they had brought theirs back to life. And I knew I didn't have that going on, but I didn't know why. I couldn't figure out. I couldn't see. They had done all the 12 steps. They were doing the drill. They were doing the work on a daily basis. I had done as much of it as I was willing to do, and now I'm just going to meetings and staying sober. And from 7 to 10 years, I did a gradual decline, which I didn't see until after I was able to come out of it and look back. But it was God who brought me out of that. God has saved me so many times. I know any time I get saved, it's because it's God's fine hand. At 10 years sober, 10 years and 2 weeks, it was June 25th, 1989. I was at a women's weekend called Woman to Woman. I was sitting on a patio. The weekend was over. I was talking to a woman, and we were talking about how the demands that AA makes upon us. They expect us to do all of these things. We're supposed to not say no to an AA request, and we're supposed to do panels and 12-step calls and general service, and we're supposed to... Anyway, it just seemed overwhelming. It was way too much to ask. I have a life, and she had a life, and all of a sudden, God settled over that patio, and I heard what I was saying. What I was saying was, I don't have time for Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the very, very first time, I equated Alcoholics Anonymous with the maintenance of my sobriety. I did not know until that moment that it was because of AA that I was able to stay sober those 10 years, and I wasn't going to last any longer. At the moment that realization came to me, the realization was, you better do this the way they tell you to do it in the book, because you're going to be drunk by the end of the week if you don't. Somehow I just got the gift of that knowledge and awareness. I went home from that meeting. I told my husband that my life had to change. I'm going to start going to meetings every day. I'm going to audition meetings because I don't know how to work the 12 steps. I don't know how to do it. I had to get my sponsor died. Just my first sponsor, whom I lied to all the time, had passed away, and now I had to get a new sponsor. I went out in earnest seeking a sponsor who could tell me how to work the 12 steps, meetings who could tell me how I worked the 12 steps. What do the traditions really mean? I became passionate about understanding Alcoholics Anonymous because now I know my life depends on it. I became a GSR. I did intergroup. I started doing the work of Alcoholics Anonymous, but most importantly, I completed my 12 steps. I made my amends. I couldn't wait to make them because of those 5 weeks. I am terrified of drinking again. I'm not today. The book says that we don't live in fear of alcohol anymore, and I don't. I do not live in fear of alcohol anymore. It's what is the word that the book uses? I can't think. Oh darn! I can't think of the word. But anyway, we're placed in a position of neutrality where alcohol is concerned, and that's the way I feel. It just is kind of insignificant to me. But it was once I knew that I had to get busy, I got busy. And there is action that has to be taken in Alcoholics Anonymous, not just activity. I mean, I was doing all kinds of activity before then. But I got into the action. I got into the big book. I went to meetings. And I really recommend auditioning meetings. I went everywhere. I heard there was a good meeting. And I made sure that I was sitting in a meeting where they talked about the solution and not about the problems. And I still do that. I'm 33 years sober, and I still go to meetings where they talk about the solution. I don't want to hear about the problems unless you've got an answer for me. I was told early on that you take your problems to your sponsor, you take your solutions to the meetings. And that is a formula that has been working for me all these years now. I am still very active in AA. I just finished doing 5 years in general service, and I either do H&I or I do general service. I like those two areas of service. And now I have a panel, and I'm doing my panel, and I'm giving general service a break. But I will go back to that too because I love that way of service. I sponsor a lot of women. I am sponsored. I go to meetings. I get involved in the nitty gritty of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to tell you, this last week has been a real eye-opener for me because I thought, until Monday of this week, I thought I was doing fine. I had been in what I've been calling a funk. I don't want to call it a depression because I think that minimizes what a real depression is, and I am not a depressive person. But I've been in this place of apathy, and I'm going through the motions. But I have been really in an uncomfortable place. And I thought I really thought I'm going through some kind of a phase. You know, life is good sometimes, life is bad sometimes. And I have completely forgotten that I am not at the mercy of my circumstances or what's going on around me. It is my own attitude toward the things that are going on around me. It's what I do about them that makes the difference, and I've forgotten that. And this sack that I had been carrying around with me for the last few months had gotten heavier and heavier and heavier. My best friend died in October. Another dear friend is dying of a brain tumor. Lots of things have been going on, and I thought, I didn't think those things caused it, but I thought it was the source of this this feeling of life just isn't that wonderful anymore. And what I realized on Monday, thanks to the big book, was that I'm the one who's been putting those rocks in that bag for these last few months, and I didn't even realize it. It says that we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And when I read that, I realized again, or re-realized, that it's in step, that's in step 10. And step 10 is a reworking of 4 through 9. 4 through 9, 4 through 9. We live in those central steps of our program. And I realized that I had let some of those things slide. I was still getting on my knees every day. I'm always on my knees, but I was forcing myself. I was doing it, but I was forcing myself to do it. But I realized that from reading that sentence, that the real work is done in 4 through 9. That is how I maintain my spiritual condition, by living the principles of this program. And I hadn't been doing that. I let some of those things slide, and I was starting to get into judgment. Starting to get into judgment as if I wasn't in any judgment at all before. My head's always taking your inventory, but it's what I do with that. And I wasn't pushing those thoughts away. I was indulging in that kind of judgment, and I just I was letting I had hurt somebody's feelings on Friday night, one of my sponsees, and I had hurt her feelings. And I tried to convince myself on Saturday and Sunday, it wasn't my fault. She shouldn't have done that. I just did not want to have to make amends. And suddenly on Monday, I thought, what the hell are you doing? This is how you practice your program. When you're wrong, you promptly make amends. I picked up the phone and I called my sponsor, and I'm doing 4 through 9. And I called my sponsee and I said, I have to come see you. It's nothing I could do on the telephone. I went over to her place and I told her why I did what I did and how dreadfully sorry I was. And I didn't point out her part in it. And I suddenly, just since Monday, because I realized what I was doing wrong, that I can reverse course at any time. And I have reversed my course since Monday. I have been in the big book. I have been reminding myself of what the work is that I have to do. I'm just so diligent now about my 10th step. I had been before, and I'm back doing a really careful 10th step. I was just kind of blowing it off at night, pretending. But now I really am. I'm trying to do a 10th step as I go through my day and at night, and I've gotten back into the action of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't tell you how much better I feel. We get to always continue to learn, and I'm sorry that I have to be 33 years sober and learn that again. I wanted to think, boy, with this much sobriety, I just, you know, I got it together. And sometimes I do have it together, and sometimes I don't have it together. And I have to be very careful and very, I love the word vigilant. I think that's probably the most important word there is to me about my program. I have to be constantly on guard, because I'm an alcoholic, and even though I'm my life, some people say that our lives are still unmanageable. My life is not still unmanageable when I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't even, if it were supposed to be unmanageable, why would they even mention it in the first step? I mean, it says my life has become unmanageable, which suggests to me it's not supposed to be. And when I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can manage my life with God's help, because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. My life becomes very manageable, and in 4 days, I've turned it around, and I feel like my life is manageable again. There's some things that I have to go back and undo that I did during this period of not really keeping a good eye on myself. But I'm just so grateful that I have these tools, and I have people in my life who love me. My sponsor was wonderful about forgiving me. My sponsor gave me some really good direction, and I have people who care enough about my sobriety. That I get to, because they care about my sobriety, I get to care about my sobriety, and I get to care about the sobriety of others. I can get so self-centered I forget to even care how you're doing. I found myself during this period forgetting to pray for other people. I was just on my knees. I was doing the third and seventh step prayers, and I try to say the prayer of St. Francis, although sometimes that gets a little long and it's tedious. But I try to do those things, but I was forgetting to pray for other people. And that was one of the things that was going wrong, and one of the reasons that I was feeling the way I was feeling. So I'm in the process of turning it all around again, and thank God I know how to do that. And I can pass that on to you. So, if you find you're in a funk, you know, check it out. See if maybe you're having the same kind of problem that I was, and you can catch it a lot sooner than I did, and that you can empty out that sack of rocks anytime you want to. Anyway, thank you very much for having me here tonight. It's a pleasure.